Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Ocean State Athlete Spotlight Podcast. I'm your co-host, Ron Robert, with our host, Matt Morocco. How you doing, Matt?
Not bad, Ron. How you doing, buddy?
Awesome. Awesome. So this is exciting. Our first show, we got through with flying colors, I believe.
I think it worked out well, all things considered.
All things considered. And we made the save. And so tonight, Matt, you got a great guest for the show.
Yes, sir. We have Jimmy Barron Jr. on, Rhode Island high school star athlete, basketball at URI and current professional and runner, owner of Barron Basketball, basketball training, high school, collegiate, any athlete really who wants to get better at basketball is what he's taking care of now.
Right. So Jimmy, you know, this is the Ocean State Athlete Spotlight, and Jimmy is, you know, the quintessential, you know, athlete that we want to have on the show. You know, started out basketball in Rhode Island from East Greenwich, goes to URI, plays 4 years in URI, a perennial D1 powerhouse, making it to the NCAA tournament all the time. Then goes overseas, plays professional, and now he's starting his own company. So, this is great stuff. Let's bring
Jimmy on the show. Jimmy, how you doing, bud?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no. Thanks for being here. Jimmy, we appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks for coming on the show. I'm gonna bow out now and let Matt and Jimmy have their time. Because just, you know, I'm not looking for the glory, right, Matt?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We'll take care of it. Don't worry. Enjoy yourself.
So I'm here, though. You need anything. And I hope you guys have a big show.
All right. Thanks a lot. All right. So let's get it out of the way. So let me get the overall intro down, right? Make sure I have all the pertinence here. Rhode Island high school state champion, 4-year starter at URI, 6th currently, I believe, still all-time leading scorer, 2 times in the NIT, career leader for 3-pointers made in a career, All-Atlantic 10 first team, 11-year pro, Euro Cup champion, still current pro, father, husband, owner of Barron Basketball. Did I miss anything important?
No, I would just switch around and start it from first, then a husband, and then you can go with all the accolades after that. That sounds about right.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So I'm super stoked to have you here, obviously. I'm a basketball guy. To have somebody who has taken it to as close to the highest level as humanly possible here with basketball from Rhode Island. So to have you on is super, super exciting for all of us.
No, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me. And this will be a lot of fun.
No, it's going to be a blast. So obviously we should probably chit-chat about what's going on now with the NBA, with them postponing games and possibly the season just being done. What do you got to say about that?
I think it's, you know, I support everything that they're doing. I mean, being a white person, white male, you know, especially in this sport of basketball, right now I'm just trying to do as much listening as possible. Especially with some black teammates that I've played with. No, all the black teammates I've played with that I don't know, you know, the experiences that they're going through. And I think the one thing that we can do is ask questions, you know, start conversations that, you know, for some people are difficult to have. And I think that's very important to just try to understand, not just everything that's going on, but everything that's going on through their eyes. And I think that's very important. You know, it was kind of funny because everything started to die down a little bit, you know, once we got back on the air. And now it's, you know, it's starting to pick up. I was expecting everyone to shut it down, you know, not just the NBA, but I know the WNBA, I think, watching on TV, they said they were going to play, but now I don't think they played.
I think it was out on Twitter that they're in they're unifying with the NBA and they're calling it quits for at least tonight.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, everyone's got to jump in on it. I know there's some Major League Baseball teams that did the same thing. So I think if everyone does something collectively, I think that's the only way that, you know, voices are going to be heard.
Oh yeah, 110%. I agree. So I agree. I think it's especially you can say this as being a white basketball player. You're used to being in the minority in the group most of the time when you're there, so you're able to see it from a very different perspective. I feel as a basketball player, as we're more empathetic to the situations because you see sometimes how they're treated and how your black teammates have to act in certain situations.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Not just here, but in Europe also. It's unfortunate that it's still out there. And, you know, they've been trying to, I don't know what the right word for it, but push change for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just seem to be doing circles. So it's unfortunate to say that we're still here. I think, though, that hopefully, you know, the most important people, that they'll start to really understand everyone's unifying and kind of getting behind, you know, change, and hopefully something good comes out of it.
No, hopefully something good does come out of it. Definitely. But let's move on. Obviously, we don't want to dwell on this. We could do hours long on something like this, but we'll move on to some different topics. So you came here to Rhode Island to play hoops. You win a state championship. You played AAU. Who'd you play AAU for when you were here?
The Rhode Island Breakers.
Now, who's your coach?
So I had Jim Fields. Mike Stevens was involved a little bit before he kind of went off on his officiating career. Dave Vitale, the following
season. Big Dave.
Big Dave. the late John Smith was involved a little bit too.
John Smith coached me when I was a Breaker years ago.
Yep. So we had a good, we had a really good crew. You know, first year was kind of a mix of, you know, just those top seniors in Rhode Island. And then the following year, you know, I had post-grad, I did post-grad year at Worcester. So I played another year after that and was able to play like with Joe Mazzulla, DJ Kachiri, some of the guys from Hendrickson.
Nice.
We had a good group. I remember we had a really good run in Las Vegas that second year. I want to say we won like maybe three or four games on a Sunday, ended up losing to, I believe, Carmelo Anthony's team from Baltimore, Cecil Kirk.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we had a good little run. It was fun times, AU, but it's funny to see how much that's changed.
It's a totally different environment now, the way everybody changed, the way it's changed. And it's the elite of the elite, and a team of Rhode Islanders, that's really a team full of Rhode Islanders, doesn't happen very often anymore.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, you're totally right with that.
So you had some great coaches there, and obviously then you go to Worcester, you played for Eddie Riley, right? Just, 2 years out when he was finished at Bryant? Or just came over?
Now you're asking. That's a tough question. I don't know how long it was. He was just the biggest selling point there was he was so much relatable to my father, you know, that it was an easy choice. And let's be honest, I was looking at St. Thomas More and Brewster on top of that. And they had some guys coming in. I want to say they had like 7 or 8 D1 players. So I wasn't that good coming out of high school. You know, I only had a Division II offer and I needed to go somewhere, obviously, to develop.
But
I also needed to play too. So Worcester Academy had offered a really good situation. Wasn't too far from home. I related really well with another guy they had coming in, Aaron Jackson,
who's
playing professionally overseas. And we hit it off right away. And I just related really well to the coaches and the school and everything. So
that's awesome.
Very lucky.
Eddie was a good guy. I used to go to his camp at Bryant when he was at Bryant.
Okay.
I had hoped to play for him. And then he was gone by the time I was in college.
Okay.
But he was Eddie Riley was a good guy. Now the types of things that you picked up from him, you said he related a lot to your father, like to what your father was like as a coach. What kind of things did you pick up from Eddie along the way?
He was just very hard on me, you know, very hard on, and he challenged me a lot just to be the best that I could be. And there wasn't, I can't pick one thing specific. I remember we went, you know, there was a lot of friction between us, but a lot of positives came out of that as well.
Yeah, of course.
We played off of each other very well. I still talk to him maybe 2, 3, 4 times a month.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great.
Very well. And it's just that, you know, that normalcy that I got from him that I had from my dad growing up, I guess to say, and that kind of felt right at home. And, you know, he wanted me to be a scorer. He wanted me to be very aggressive.
Yeah.
And you know, I went there for one reason, to really develop, to be able to play for my father. So, and we all had that mentality going in, and they really helped me to get to that, I guess, that goal, to be ready to play at the next level at Rhode Island.
Nice, nice. All right, we're gonna come back to that. When Jimmy and I are done here tonight, we're gonna stay tuned for the Tom Gronkowski show starting at 9 p.m. right here with Ruth the Truth and Coach Jay. All right, and we're back. All right. So you've said there that your goal was to really mature and to grow as a player, to play for your dad. Was that your top choice? Was that your dream as a kid? You always wanted to go play for your dad as long as it was allowable? Or were there other options by the time you left?
I wouldn't say it was a choice. I wasn't really highly recruited. I just wasn't – I was a Division II player at best coming out of high school.
Yeah.
So when I went to Worcester Academy, it was like the first week of the season. We played in a tournament down in just outside of Baltimore or maybe New Jersey. And I had some really good games, and it kind of opened some people's eyes. But at that point, I had already committed to play for my dad. So, and that was the whole reason why I went there in the first place. So he kind of, you know, let all the other coaches know, like, he's off limits. You know, he's
stiff arming the opponents over there. Is hands off.
I had not. I found out about this maybe a year or two ago when I had talked to some of my coaches at Worcester Academy. Like, I was asking, like, was there any other colleges that were interested? And they're like, oh yeah, are you kidding me? Like, there was just, you know, they ran into a brick wall with your dad, and you know, he kind of put a kibosh on all that. But if I had another choice, it probably would have been Notre Dame, just because that's where I was born. My dad was an assistant there, so we had ties there. They're a school, ACC school, obviously loves to shoot threes.
Yeah.
Coach Bray's a great guy, so
yeah,
I think that would have been a really good fit.
Similar style to your father, coaching-wise?
Yeah, a little bit up and down, maybe a little slower offensively, pack the paint a little bit more on defense. But very similar styles, so I think it would have been a pretty good fit for me. But you know, looking back, I wouldn't change anything. I would have went right back to Rhode Island. So
you're right back to Rhode Island, get to play for your dad, and that's got to be a dream, especially for the family. They get your home, they get to watch you play every game. Your dad gets to coach you, which I'm sure your butt. You know, if you're like any other father son combo, you're butting heads, you know, left and right. But it's got to be quite a unique experience to be playing for your father and to be able to learn and at the same point kind of have that, you know, father-son relationship.
Yeah, but we didn't have much of the father-son relationship when we got there. When I got there and started out of Rhode Island, I was so focused on just being the hardest worker.
Yeah.
I knew I wasn't, you know, it was at the first time in my career team where I wasn't one of the main players. And I think that's the same set for a lot of kids that go to college. And I was okay with it just because I had grown up watching these guys. I was the ball boy. I was in practice all the time. I was rebounding for the guys. So I grew up with that. So when I got there, I knew, like, okay, I got a long way to go. So let me just keep my head down and work as hard as I can work and take every day, you know, one day at a time, and just try to get better and try to learn as much as I could along the way. So
now,
go ahead.
Did you feel like when you first got there? Because I know I remember I only played basketball at Johnson Wales. So we'll keep it in perspective. Obviously, it's a big jump. But you get to college. You used to be in, or you know, you come from prep. I came from high school. You get to college, and you feel like the gap in physicality, the gap in talent, is a little overwhelming right away and a little bit disheartening because you're used to being the man.
Yeah.
You know, used to having the ball in your hands, kind of not really saying doing whatever you wanted to, but it's a very difficult adjustment.
Yeah, it was probably the speed of the game was the biggest adjustment. Defensively for me as well, just that was my biggest weakness. And I knew that I had to just work as hard as I could to make up, you know, that ground. And it took a little while to get adjusted to the speed of the game. The good thing was that I would, you know, growing up in high school, I would practice a lot in the summer with my dad's teams. Mm-hmm. So I would kind of get exposed very easily. And it allowed me to kind of like understand, look, I got a long way to go. I never thought I was better than I was. Believe me. I knew that I had a long way to go. Even going into Worcester Academy, I was like, I would say scared was the right word, but like, okay, I got 8 months. Like, I told my dad I'm gonna pay for him. He made an investment to send me to a prep school, which, you know, is a big investment. And I got to do my hardest every single day to not let him down.
Yeah.
You know, and then when I got to Rhode Island, look, it's a business. So now my production as a player, his job's on the line for that.
Yeah.
So now it's a different dynamic. So we never had that time to be like, oh, hey, dad, hey, son, hey, how are you? You know, it was more like, all right, let's, you know, when's the next practice? All right, when's the next workout? When's the next, you know, and just try to work as hard as I could.
Now, were you living at home during that time or were you living on campus like a normal?
On campus. I would go time to time just to, you know, dinner, mom will cook dinner or something like that. You know, go watch my brother play. But I was 100%, you know, staying on campus. So
I remember what your father used to watch Billy in the AAU tournaments and you'd see your dad on the sideline. Yep. My first interaction with your father, I'm refereeing one of Billy's games and he's screaming at me on the sidelines. And I'm like, you know, 20 years old. I'm like, you know, just give me a little bit of a break. You know, I'm kind of, I have no idea who he is. I throw a whistle at him. I go, if you want to do it, you know, if you do a better job, feel free. So you get pulled off of the court. Like, you know, that's the coach of URI. I'm like, oh, smooth move, Matt. Smooth move, Matt.
Because when I was growing up, I wasn't, he wasn't too vocal around me. And if he was, I never heard him.
It was one of those late 9 o'clock in like at night games on a Saturday. Nobody wants to be there.
Yeah.
But he was a great guy. He laughed about it afterwards. He was a good sport.
No, he was. And I tell you what, he did something as a father looking back that was invaluable for me. He never pushed me to play basketball. He never
really did.
Now, I was around it all the time, so he didn't, let's be honest, he didn't have to push me.
Yeah.
He was always around his teams, come to practice. I used to go early with him to the games,
shoot
around before the games and rebound for the guys and and stuff like that. But it wasn't until it was my second game freshman year in Olean, New York, so the year before he took Rhode Island.
Yeah.
I had an awful game. I mean, it was terrible. I didn't make a shot. I had turnovers, and it was – one of the very few times early in my career that I was like, didn't feel like I belonged on the court. And I remember I had tears in my eyes after the game. It was like a rivalry game. We played like a crosstown team, a lot of people at the game, whatever. So it was embarrassing. And I went to him after the game, right outside the locker room, tears in the eyes. I said, Dad, you got to help me. I said, I don't want to feel this way anymore. I don't like the way I feel. I said, I want to get better and I need your help. And my dad took my mother and my brother home. We dropped them off at the house. And then he took me to the Riley Center at St. Bonaventure where he was coaching. Flipped on the lights of the Riley Center. And we worked out until like 2-3 in the morning that night. And so my mom wasn't too happy about that, being any mother. But from that point forward was when I really made a shift and started to like really work on my game, like, you know, like not just go out and just shoot around and have fun and, you know, like count down 3-2-1 and try to make a game.
Yeah, of course.
And no one watching. No, now I'm starting to do drills and really starting to hone in. Okay, what do I need to get better? These are my weaknesses. And we played the same team at a Christmas tournament. So about 2 months later, and I had over 30 points. I hit 8 threes and it was the first time I had saw my work pay off.
Oh, that's awesome.
So once you get that the first time, now you just want more and more and more, and you want to push the envelope more and more and more. So that was really when it started for me.
Oh, that's awesome. So you're seeing the fruits of your labor, obviously, at a young age, and how much work it takes to get to that next level, and also how much improvement comes when you do put in that type of work, obviously. So at what point, like, you think at URI, do you feel like you – I don't say that you didn't belong prior, but you had the confidence where you're like – not only do I belong here, but you know, this is my team? Was it one, you know, junior year, more towards your senior year?
No, I don't think I ever felt like it was like my team.
Yeah, but no, but that you belonged, that it was that you were an important cog in that team.
Sophomore year, probably at the start of my sophomore year, had a couple really good games and really started to get some good confidence. Towards the end of the sophomore year, the run in the A-10 tournament, when we knocked off, I think we knocked off Xavier in the semifinals. Yep. And I really started to kind of come into my own game and understood and, like, you know, just kind of have that feeling like, okay, this is, I'm here, I belong. Now let's not get ahead of myself. Let's keep working. You know, let's see how far we can take this sort of mentality. Senior year, it wasn't like, hey, this is my team. No, I kind of felt a little more responsibility just so as a leader. Yeah. And that I didn't want to let the guys under me down. And they looked up to me as a leader as well. One of the hardest workers. Luckily, I had a guy who was in my wedding, Bakeem Seawright, one of my best friends. And to really kind of play off of each other as the leaders our senior year.
That's awesome. That was So obviously, if we're going to discuss the URI time period, you have to probably bring up the Duke game, which I'm sure gets brought up a lot when people see you that game, national television, obviously. I was watching on your Instagram where you're talking about being in the zone. Mm-hmm. That's got to be one of the probably best feelings besides getting married and seeing your kids that you've had your entire life. At one point, you know, national television, you know, playing against one of arguably the best coaches of all time, you know.
I never, like, once I got in the zone, though, I'll talk about what happened before that later. But, like, once I got into the zone, it wasn't like I admitted to myself, hey, I'm in the zone. Like, this is great. This feeling, I feel amazing. No, because then that, as soon as you do that, you're out of the zone. Yeah. You know, it was kind of like just every single shot, one shot at a time. I tell kids all the time, it's okay to struggle. You know, it's okay to struggle and miss shots, make mistakes, because those are your opportunities to learn. It's okay to get frustrated, but don't allow that frustration to leak into the next decision, the next shot, the next play. Try not to make the same mistake twice. Yeah. You know, I even tell kids, try not to miss the same shot the same way.
Yeah.
You know, have different, you know, I mean, just, again, try to adjust as quick as possible. And that game for me against Duke, I mean, I started the game 0-for-4, a couple turnovers. Luckily, my teammates were playing amazing, so we were still ahead. I mean, at one point, I think we had a 10-point lead. And it wasn't until the end of the first half, early second half, where I caught fire and got into that zone. But I had the same mentality as I had when I was missing shots. I wasn't getting frustrated. So when I started making shots, I wasn't like, you know, the kids now, what do they do? Something like this.
Oh, yeah, all that. Yeah, it's awful.
So, again, I'm not going to speak for everyone else, because that probably works for kids. They need to do stuff like that to kind of feel like they're in the game.
Yeah.
For me as a player, I never was like that. So I never allowed myself to kind of get too overly excited within the framework of the game to try and stay, you know, even keel at a certain level, not get too high or not get too low.
Nice. Well, that's good for the kids to know that are listening out there. So you graduate, right?
Yep.
And the whole time since high school, right, you've been working out with Rob McClanahan, right? Rob Mack over on the summers.
Yep.
So obviously, for those who don't know, NBA trainer, trains, you know, Kevin Love, Steph Curry, Jimmy Barron, amongst others. now, at that point, have you, you know, are you still thinking, you know, I want to play professionally afterwards, thinking it's a realistic possibility? Or are you seeing the avenues while you're training with Rob that maybe this is something I could do after basketball as well?
A little bit of both, because I had done some training right after college as well. Had a couple young kids that I was just helping out, working out, that were friends of, or I knew their fathers and were friends with them. So, but with Rob, I you know, he was really, like, I just kept learning from him. And still to this day, I keep learning from him. He's like an older brother to me. Yeah. And we're very close. I mean, my first year in Turkey, he flew over for a week. And I was on the southern coast of Turkey, very close to the border of Syria.
Yeah.
He flew over for a week. He did the same when I was in Spain for my first 2 years. So, and it's just been a constant, you know, learning for me to really just pick his brain. Now I'm picking his brain about the business, not just like how I can improve my skills. So he's been great in that sense. Again, been like an older brother to me, so someone I can bounce things off of at any time.
Rob's great. To be able to have somebody like that's got to be absolutely amazing and invaluable, especially, you know, while you're still playing professionally, but as you're beginning to transition with Baron Basketball to what you want to do for hopefully the next, you know, 20-odd years of your life.
Sure.
But next we're going to say, we're going to come right back. We have a great Yankees podcast premiere on Thursday, The Evil Empire Takeover with Sim. We'll be right back. All right, and we're back. So right when you're done with URI, you decide what are your options? So what do you have going on? You sign with an agent right away? What do you
So Rob was working with an agency, and you know, I had talked with a couple different agents, but decided to go with the guy that he recommended at Wasserman Media, BJ Armstrong.
Okay.
So that was pretty cool because
He's BJ Armstrong, obviously.
So he was always like real with me and realistic and never really like pump my ego or stuff that some other agents do. And he looked, he said, like, look, if we try to get you drafted, like it's gonna be a stretch. And I knew that. I had no problem with that.
Yeah.
But we're gonna try, we're gonna give you all of our resources, which they did. They took care of me very well. And I was seen by all 30 teams. Worked out in front of all teams, had great guys to work out with, and Rob was organizing everything from the workout standpoint.
Yeah.
So that was great in a sense. I almost got really close with the Trailblazers. They had two picks in the second round that year, so 55 and 56. They had told me they were going to take me with the second of those picks. I believe. It's a long time. But come to that point, they ended up choosing Patty Mills instead. I remember as soon as the pick was about to be announced, I got a call from BJ. So I get all excited. this is it. This is my moment. I was down in my basement by myself. I don't want to talk to anybody because I didn't know what was going to happen. And I answered the phone. He said, it's not going to happen. And I was just like, oh,
soul crushing.
Not yet at the time, of course.
Yeah,
for sure. But looking back at it now, I was able to have a great career in Europe. Still played a couple summer leagues with different teams. Was able to get some good exposure, but I probably would have had a much better career over in Europe anyways, just because that's the style and the type of player that I had a good run, and so still going.
Do you feel like, now this is just a personal question, because I always wonder, do you feel like you came a little early, like if you were out of college maybe 5-6 years ago? Where the NBA really opened up and there were shooters, you know, more shooting was, you know,
maybe available. Maybe not, because I think with my size, my athleticism or lack thereof, because I'm not that much of an F, but with my size, I would have needed to play more as a point guard but also be able to defend, you know, point guards in the NBA. And point guards in the NBA are most athletic right now, you know, with D. Rose, Westbrook, Steph.
Yeah.
So that would have been a big challenge for me. I think if I would have, again, I'm obviously biased towards myself. I try not to be, but if I would have gotten a realistic shot, you know what I mean? Like with a team for an extended period of time, me along with many other players that never played in the NBA, I think we could have made it work.
Yeah.
You know, again, that's not how it's set up. It shouldn't be set up that way either. You know, I got my chance. I was seen by teams and it didn't work out. And that's fine. I felt like I put everything I had into it, and I'm okay with it. So, it is what it is.
So. All right. So you've gotten to travel the world.
Mm-hmm.
How many countries have you had an opportunity to play in? I did some research, but I couldn't figure out exactly all the country names. So,
oh, you're putting me on the spot. So, to play in, like, as far as to live, so we'll just go.
Yeah.
Turkey, Spain. So that's two. Russia. Italy, then back to Spain, so that doesn't count. Italy, Belgium, Lithuania, France. Yeah, so seven.
So seven countries have gotten to travel the world to play basketball.
Yep.
Absolutely. So you're getting paid to play basketball and live the dream, essentially, with the obvious exception of probably being away from your family for an extended period of time, which has probably got to be, especially at this age, it's got to be the hardest.
Yes and no. I was lucky to meet a great woman. We met in college, and she's traveled the world with me. And
oh, that's amazing.
Kids, you know, last 2 years in France, they were enrolled in school. They were going 4 days a week. So we picked up shop and set up shop over in Europe. You know,
that's amazing.
The last 6 or 7 years, and it's been great. So
wow.
Yep.
So the time you've played in Europe, obviously we've chatted, you know, leading up to this podcast and whatnot, you've gotten to play for some amazing coaches.
Yep.
So what have you picked from them that you're able to use now for Baron basketball?
Just a couple different things. I mean, every country is a little bit different. I've had some great coaches. My first coach I had when I was in Spain, he's been the head guy at Real Madrid the last 9 years. He, and along with the GM at the time, brought in Luka Doncic when Luka was, I think, 11 years old, 11 or 12 years old. Mm-hmm. So I've stayed in touch with him and just tried to, you know, keep contact, kind of like follow up. I almost played for him when I was in Rome. Unfortunately, I couldn't get out of my contract. It didn't work out. But just to see like how, you know, certain players, not just Luka, but certain young players that I've come across in different countries have developed and how those coaches have developed those players.
Yeah.
So overseas, there's a lot of agility work. And one thing I've learned and what I try to incorporate in my workouts is a lot of agility work and a lot of footwork. If you can make 90 out of 100 shots or even more than that, there's no sense in that if you can't get that shot off in a game and don't know how to.
Yeah.
So being able to utilize that skill in a game situation, I try to break that down in the most simplest form, the most simplest drills that you can do. A lot of it is tedious, and you know, you have to be consistent with it. You have to do it over and over and over again. But that's what separates the good ones from the great ones. You know, it's able to kind of keep the head down, stick to the game plan, stick to the workouts, and be able to do it consistently to see yourself progress. So, but yeah, like not to talk and ramble on, but every country is different.
Yeah.
You know, I guess you could say a lot of soccer training has kind of infused itself into basketball.
Over
a lot of the agility's footwork, the resistance training
is huge.
And like I said, I've been lucky not just to play for Pablo, but I played for Remus Curtinitis. He was the starting two guard on the 88 Olympic gold medal team. They won the Olympic gold medal in Seoul. He played for the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
Sabonis, Marcelonis, and the really core, they call it the core four of Lithuania at the time. So again, just truly blessed to play with not just great coaches, but also great players as well.
Oh, that's awesome. So now you're back here, kind of open-ended, right? Until they call you back and when it's safe.
Yeah, that too. There's no rush in going back from what I've heard from players that are over there already, players that are waiting to go over. My agent as well is that this year, you know, FIBA has kind of given teams a way out in a sense that if the virus picks up again, teams aren't liable to pay their players. Last year, I was lucky to be in France at the time.
Yeah.
So when the virus picked up, you know, we still received a majority of the remainder of our contract.
Yeah.
Whereas in other countries, it wasn't the case. So
kind of see you later. Good luck. We'll call you next season.
In a sense, and you don't want to, you know, I don't want to leave, you know, I don't want to bring my family over there, you know,
where it's unsafe, of course.
Right. Where it's not safe. But also if the virus does pick up again, which everyone says it's going to in the fall, it would be tough for me to live with just based on my desire to keep playing.
Yeah, of course.
So in a sense, I think we're just going to wait it out, try to be smart and go from there.
So while you're here, where can people find you if they want to reach out for training?
Yeah.
And what you have available.
I'm in Rhode Island. I'm here Monday through Fridays. That's when I'm open. And I do most of my workouts in the afternoon. And you could find me at baronbasketball.com. You could send me an email, baronbasketball@gmail.com. social media. You could reach me there too. I'm trying to get better with that. I'm one of the older people that are still trying to learn the ins and outs. Actually, I'll ask some of the kids that I train like different questions on, okay, how do I do this? So when you post the story, you know, why does it only last for 24 hours? You know, and I'm much better at it now. But I'm the older generation. Like if I post something on myself, like when I did the Duke game, the only reason I did that was because I wanted to illustrate, like, look, it's okay to struggle. And that game, you know, everyone says you had a great game. That was awesome. That was fantastic. I couldn't believe it, you know, whatever. But I couldn't have started that game worse.
Yeah.
People don't understand that kids now, when they struggle, it's like the end of the world. It's okay to struggle. You have to struggle if you want to have progress. So again, the social media thing, the self-promoting, I'm getting better, but I still do cringe. You know,
I feel like you're a lot like Rob in that it's not about you. It's always about the guys that you train. And that's really what I think separates you two, and you especially, from those other guys, where it's not as, even though they post tons of videos about their guys, it's not about their guys. It's more about them showing it, where you, it's about the work. It's about, you know, you could train, you know, amazing plays. You were talking earlier how you're training a former A-10 player of the year. I've never seen that person on your Instagram yet, once yet.
I did. I posted just because she posted. So I did a little retweet.
And yeah.
Thanks for everything.
Yeah.
You know, she reached out to me today because she said she had a great shooting day.
And
all your help and everything. And I said, well, you know, you make the shot. I didn't come down there and knock down jumpers for you and whatnot. So you make the shots. Belichick's great, you know, like coaches lose games, players win them, you know, and I think that's so invaluable. It's so true. And it really just allows the player to, I think, have more confidence and trust in the coach as well.
Nice. Awesome. So, all right. So the last segment, which we sent to you, obviously you got these questions, was we do our Fantasy Five segment. I'm sure you got those questions. I do.
I got the question. I just forgot them.
I can read them off to you. Let me know when you're ready.
I'm pulling up the email. Here they are. I got them.
All right. So
go ahead.
First one, we asked Ron the same ones, and I'm kind of judgy, so I'll let you know what I think of your opinion. What are your answers? Your favorite food. So not like what type of food, but like favorite meal, like if it's your last meal, what's your favorite meal, restaurant, where's it from, or a home cooked meal that maybe your wife, your mom makes?
Now you're going to put me out if I'm not going to choose my wife's meal. No, she'll understand this. The pizza at La Osteria La Grepia, right across from my street from where I lived in Rome.
Yeah.
Amazing pizza. Just a regular margarita pizza. And then sliced prosciutto on the side. So there was no diet that year that I was following. Just trying all the foods, and that place right across the street, the response of our club was terrific.
That's awesome. Yeah. How about your single, your favorite movie to watch? You can watch it over and over every time it comes on, no matter where it is, you pop it on, you're sitting down to watch the movie.
This is a surprising one. Interstellar. I'm a big space guy. I like astronomy. I got a telescope for the kids. I'm always looking up at the sky. I got the app now. You like, oh, what star is that? You put the phone up in the sky.
All right.
Person looking up. I'm into the stars and stuff.
All right.
Yeah.
Your favorite, not celebrity, but movie or television character. So not the person who played it, but the character in the show or the movie.
There's three of them, but they all kind of play into each other because they all got the same initials. Jack Bauer.
Okay.
Jason Bourne.
All right. You're an action all guy. I dig it.
That whole like same sort of genre.
Yeah.
Big into those, especially Jack Bauer. I'm a big 24 guy.
Always nice. Nice. Piece of technology that you can't live without. I know you're not a tech guy, but if there's one piece.
Probably just either the cell phone or the iPad. I think I'm choosing like six answers for each question, but like probably I'd have to just choose my phone, just basic form of communication. Everything's done to the phone now. So yeah, that's the iPhone.
Take it with you. All right. And the last one, what's your favorite condiment and why?
Probably like Himalayan's pink salt, just because I feel like it's a little more healthy for you.
All right.
The regular salt. So that goes on a lot of my salads and especially a lot of my steaks. So that's probably something I go to a lot.
Good choice. Good choices. All right. Well, Jimmy, thank you for coming. Yep. I appreciate you being on here. Me and Ron really appreciate it, even though he's in the back end doing other stuff that we can't see. If anybody wants to find you, baronbasketball.com, baronbasketball@gmail. What's the Instagram if they want to find you?
Instagram is jbaronjr. Okay. 20. That's my public one. And yeah, for Twitter, I believe it's just jbaronjr.
All right. Awesome. Well, thanks a lot for coming on. We appreciate it. Wish you the best of luck. And thanks again.
Awesome. I appreciate it, Matt. Thanks for
good job, appreciate Jimmy.
Appreciate it, man.
Okay. All right, bud. Take care. Right.
We'll see you guys.
Talk soon.